It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This hour, it's Let Me Speak to the Governor. Governor Spencer Cox answers questions from KSL and from you. Call now, 801-575-8255. Let Me Speak to the Governor, live from the studios of KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chalaos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. We will be taking your calls, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Governor, I'd like to start out with some good news that you announced on the coronavirus front, and I understand that you are reducing the risk level for some counties today.
That's right, Maria. It's been another good week for us on the coronavirus front. We continue to see declines in cases, although that has plateaued a little bit over the last couple weeks. But we're seeing decreased cases in several of our counties. We had three counties that went from moderate to low, and we're so excited to have counties like Washington County, which was the biggest one, in Kane County, see those counties moving into a lower transmission state, and it's just more evidence that things are subsiding, that our vaccinations are working. And I just got my second dose as well. So for those on the video feed, if you see me moving my arm and kind of rubbing it, I'm told to do that so it doesn't hurt as much.
I got mine last Wednesday, so I kind of beat you on that one, Governor.
Good for you.
We've also reached a record number of vaccinations in the state, haven't we?
We have, yeah. We've had about 1.8 million doses total, first and second doses, that have been administered. Over 700,000 people now are fully vaccinated. And this was our biggest week ever, over 200,000 vaccinations, first and second doses in 1 week. So it's just incredible. When I took office 101 days ago, we had just over 300 people that were fully vaccinated. And now to think that we have over 700,000 people fully vaccinated just 100 days later is a really big deal. And you're seeing that in the numbers, especially the mortality numbers, because we focused on our elderly population, our most at-risk population. That was a decision we made when I became governor, and it was the right one. Some states did not do that. And what that means is, because about 3/4 of our deaths have come from those over the age of 65, and now 85% of those are vaccinated. So we're playing with the numbers, and the numbers are in our favor now, which for the first time in this pandemic.
I would like to get your impressions on the lifting of the mask mandate. We did that last Saturday. I have to tell you, I was in a restaurant. I don't want to be a fearmonger or a naysayer. I don't want to come across that way. But there are some concerns with just everyone deciding, oh, suddenly, that they're not going to wear a mask. It made me a little nervous. I'm going to continue wearing a mask. But are you concerned that our numbers are going to rise as a result?
Well, time will tell. Again, this was very controversial. We had pushed for a May timeline. We wanted more people to get vaccinated. The legislature was pushing for a March timeline, and April is where we ended up in those negotiations. And so, look, what I can tell you is that there are other states that have done this, Texas, Montana, and they have not seen an increase. They removed their mask mandate before we did. It's also important to note that wearing masks and a mask mandate are not the same thing. There are still lots of people like you, Maria, who will continue to wear their masks. There are lots of businesses that are continuing to wear masks or requiring mask wearing. I'm also wearing a mask. I'm not fully vaccinated. I want to make sure other people around me have the opportunity to get fully vaccinated. And so we're being careful. So it isn't a one-to-one. Not everybody is getting rid of their masks right away. So I think that's important to point out. And look, this is an opportunity for people to voluntarily do these things. I would also point out there are very few restrictions, if any, in the state right now, and most people don't even know that. For example, religious gatherings, there have been no restrictions on size or even mask restrictions for religious gatherings, whether churches or temples, since October. So churches could have full congregations with no mask, but they're being very careful. And that's the right thing to do. So we're seeing that in other places as well. The jazz games could have. Now, we do have a mask restriction for over 50 in non-religious connotations. So, you would have to, if you filled up the Vivint Arena, you would have to wear masks. And they're doing that anyway. But the NBA and the Utah Jazz have decided that they're not quite at a place where they feel safe with that being full yet. And that's the right thing for them to do. So, look, we're going to continue to give the best information we can. We're going to continue to encourage people to wear masks until more people have the opportunity to get vaccinated. And we're very hopeful that we can continue to drive down those case numbers.
There's no doubt all of us want businesses to be open. We want the theaters open. We want our churches open. We want to have that freedom. But are you afraid that, removing the mask mandate sends a message that things are safe when maybe they're not?
Well, I hope that people are listening to the actual message we're sending. And the actual message we're sending is that we are not out of this pandemic yet, that we still have. Look, there are still, 20 to 30 people every day that are being hospitalized. That's a fairly large number. Now, again, the good news is that we're seeing fewer deaths because the people who are most at risk are getting vaccinated at the highest rates. So what I do hope is I sometimes don't think we give people enough credit. There were a lot of people who, weren't paying attention to the pandemic anyway, but I think most Utahns were and still are, and they'll continue to do the right thing, and that's what we're encouraging them to do.
Governor, we're going to jump into our calls just a bit early here because we have some folks who want to kind of chime in on what we're talking about. The first one is John in Ogden, and good afternoon, John. What is your question for the governor?
Yeah, hey, thanks, Governor, and I appreciate everything you did. I got one more week till my second shot, and let's just keep it going. But on a different topic, the stimulus money that we're getting every month from the child tax credit and the state money that we got from the COVID relief bill, what is the impact going to be on Utah for the budget? And then for the child poverty, what are the projections to pull children out of hunger, poverty, and by giving that extra money per month instead of a tax break at the end of the year?
Yeah, thank you. So we don't have any projections yet on what that will do to for child poverty, but of course we're very hopeful. I mean, it's interesting to note that Utah has the second lowest child poverty rate in the nation. So we do that better here in Utah than just about anywhere else, and that's really good news for our kids. But unfortunately, we do know that we have too many kids still living in poverty. That food insecurity is still a thing for far too many kids. In fact, there are some data out there that one in five kids will experience some sort of food insecurity in the state, wondering where a meal during the week is going to come from. And so this will certainly help. We like the idea that these families will be able to get some assistance throughout the year. And then there is money coming to the state. There's some disagreement over whether this is too much. I will tell you, I tend to be in that camp. I think that Utah is one of the states that is doing very, very well. In fact, because we were so careful, because we were able to keep our economy open and do it the right way, we had a record year for our budget. We were able to invest a record amounts in education, which Utahns want. We were able to invest a record amounts in infrastructure and give a $100 million tax cut back to our seniors, to our military veterans, and to families. So that's something we're really excited about. And now we have all of this money coming to the state. And so we want to spend it in the best way possible to make sure that we're investing in the future. If this money's going to come, and we didn't ask for it, but if it's coming, we want to make sure we spend it in a way that doesn't create new obligations and ongoing obligations, but that it will be able to benefit our kids and grandkids for generations to come. So that means investing in education, investing in infrastructure, investing in those types of things. What I will say is this: the legislature makes those decisions. So we are expecting to have a special session in May. We will call them back into session so that they can decide how to, and we'll make some recommendations to them, but they will ultimately decide where and how this money gets spent. But we think there's an opportunity for Utah to lead out in a very responsible way.
And thank you for your call. And you are listening to Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio. You can be part of the program. Ask your questions right now. You can call 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. We'll be right back.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope in Darkness on KSLpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get your questions answered by the governor. Call 801-575-8255 to join Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chaleos, along with Governor Spencer Cox. We are taking your questions again at 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Governor, we have a couple of texters here wanting to know, why are we continuing the mask mandate in elementary schools?
Yeah, thank you, Marie. This is one we've gotten a lot of questions on. And look, I assure you, nobody wants this over more than me. I have kids in public schools as well, and would love to be done. But there are several reasons for this. The first is we know that the surge early on came because of schools, and cases were transmitted into people who were more at risk. While we are getting very close to having people vaccinated, especially adults, we're not there yet. We still have a long ways to go, and schools are a very particular area where people are in close quarters for a long amount of time inside, and that's the recipe for the spread of the virus. But most importantly, Utah has been one of the leading states for keeping kids in school. I was with some school administrators yesterday, and they said, look, because of our testing protocol, because of our mask protocol, we've been able to keep schools open. And if we have spread in schools, massive spread in schools, then we have no question to have to quarantine and close schools down. And we don't want that to happen. We're so close to the end of the year. And not only that, but there are a whole bunch of kids and families that are still at high risk. And if we take away those mask mandates, those kids won't be able to come in-person learning. We want as many kids there as possible. We want to prevent spread. We're so close to the finish line. We just want to get through the end of this year. We're just a few weeks away. And so that's been the recommendation of the health professionals. And so that's where we're going to go. But then we're done. There won't be any masks in the fall. We'll be back to normal after that.
Staying on the topic of schools, the next texter is asking if any of the federal relief money is going towards Chromebooks or iPads. They are concerned because they say their school is about to lose their technical support from Google and want to know if there's any help coming their way.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. So I'm not familiar with that particular issue in that particular school. But the answer is yes. So we talked a little bit in the last question about the money that's coming to the state. There is also a significant amount of money that will be coming to school districts and to individual schools. And that's the exact type of thing that they can be used for, to make sure that we're enhancing educational opportunities, enhancing education for kids who are falling behind. And of course, making it so that kids can have access to remote learning when they need it. One of the things I hope we learn coming out of this pandemic is, first of all, remote learning is not for everyone, and it's certainly not all the time. That's not a good thing. However, it can be give us an opportunity to fill in some gaps, to give some supplemental learning. And more importantly, I hope we'll stop sending our kids to school when they're sick, whether it's COVID-19 or the flu or a common cold, any of those things. But the reason people do that is they don't want them to fall behind. So if we have these tools available to our kids, then when they're sick, they can stay home and not fall behind. Or when they're, when they go on sports trips, when they have to miss class for a drama meet or something like that, they could still keep up. That's the good news. There's no reason that we shouldn't have a remote option for kids that need it. And this money can be used for that.
Governor, our next caller is James in Provo. And good afternoon, James.
Good afternoon, Maria, and good afternoon, Governor. Anyhow, basically, I just wanted to compliment you, Governor Cox. If I heard the news report right, you're wanting to kind of do what I admire, some self-restraint on gubernatorial powers. And one thought I had, and it doesn't apply to you specifically, but all governors, wouldn't it be wise to have I'll just call it an executive order, be for a fixed period of time, say 45 days, and it would expire. That way it would allow the legislature or other body to meet, convene, and kind of collaborate with you and see if the idea of the declaration was good or bad and give input. And wouldn't that be a wise idea across the board? What are your thoughts?
James, thank you. And you're right. I'm the rare governor who agreed that we have to put some guardrails around some of these the executive powers. And I think that's so important for people to understand, is that in emergency powers, that is, as you said, that is a power that has been delegated from the legislature to the executive branch so that we can respond in emergencies, because it's too hard for the legislature, a broad body, to come together, find consensus in a very short amount of time. But there should be limits on what we do with that executive power and the timing on that. And so that's exactly what we've done here in the state of Utah, is said, yes, we still want the governor to respond. We don't want to hold the governor back in any way in these emergencies, in any way that would hurt people, cost them their lives. We need that ability to respond quickly. However, over time, over 30 days or longer, then we have an opportunity to bring the legislature together to collaborate and find the right solutions. And they get to do their job in legislating and represent the people of the state of Utah. So that's exactly what we've done. We don't have usually the executive orders that I do are always related to policy that has already been passed by legislation. It's not kind of extra power that is granted out there. So that's not an issue. What you I think are talking about, though, we see at the national level a lot, and that is that the president does their thing and the legislature very rarely responds. I do think we have a little bit of a constitutional crisis in that over the past several decades, Congress has given more and more of their power to the executive branch. I think we have a good balance here in the state of Utah. I don't think we have a good balance in Washington, D.C., and I would love to see Congress being better about the way that they respond and that they act as a check on the executive. And they can do that at any time. There doesn't have to be a limit on it. They could do it. They just need to be willing to exercise their constitutional authority.
All right, James, thanks for your call this morning. Governor, next texter wants to know, what the ultimate reason for you to agree to have all youth athletic sports COVID tested next year?
So we have not made a decision on youth athletics being COVID tested next year. That hasn't happened.
Okay.
And I doubt that that will be the case. I don't see a scenario, again, unless something has changed and COVID is still very serious or deeply impacting our youth. We are requiring it through the end of this year. And again, I know people are seeing this as a restriction, but I got to tell you guys, we are seen as a national leader. We have people coming from other states so that their kids can play sports here and they can do so safely. I had an athletic director for a school district tell me just this week that having that testing protocol saved us. It allowed us and continues to allow us to have these sports, to have these kids participate, and to make sure that we don't have any mass spread events. And so it's worked exactly the way it's supposed to work, and I'm so proud of our kids. It's amazing. I'm telling you, our kids are much more resilient than parents. Our kids can do hard things. They don't complain. They just go out there, and it's been awesome to see how successful they've been this year. And so we want to continue that. But I'm very doubtful that we would have any testing mandated going forward next year.
Our next texter has taken us away from COVID. They're concerned about the drought conditions and whether you're considering a statewide ban on fireworks due to the drought.
Well, thank you. I'm also very concerned about the drought, and this looking outside right now, this has been a great 24 hours. This is exactly what we needed, but unfortunately, we still have a long ways to go. Those decisions will be made as we get closer to fireworks seasons. We have a much more condensed fireworks season than we've had in the past for that very reason, and so it will really depend on the conditions leading up to July 4th and July 24th, which are the two windows that we have in the state for fireworks. And most of those decisions will likely be made by locals and in conjunction with the state forester and others. So we don't make those decisions when it comes to local areas, but we will certainly work closely with them to help them make the right decisions and to try to slow down and prevent wildfires. And we just encourage people, be careful, conserve water this year, and please be careful with anything that you're doing. Target shooting, camping, make sure you're not dragging your chains. If you smoke, be careful where you put out your cigarettes, and if you're burning at all or doing any prescribed burning, I would just encourage you not to do that right now. It's a lot drier out there than people think and people realize, and much drier than normal for this time of year.
We need to take a break from our bottom of the hour news. A number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us 57500, and we'll be right back.
This hour, it's Let Me Speak to the Governor. Governor Spencer Cox answers questions from KSL and from you. Call now, 801-575-8255. Let Me Speak to the Governor, live from the studios of KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chalaos. I'm actually coming to you from in studio. Governor Spencer Cox, however, is joining us from the state capitol in that beautiful gold room, Governor.
It's the coolest room in the state. it's so awesome to be able to do this, and I love the technology that makes it sound like we're right next to each other.
It is great. Let's go back to our phone lines. We have David in Orem. Good afternoon, David. What is your question?
Yes, Governor, I have a question. I'm one of the many people in the state that are upset about the fact they got rid of the little cards that come in the mail telling me my vehicle's due inspection. Bring those back. If it costs the state money, charge me $5.
David, you and I are of the same opinion here. Look, when COVID hit, you'll remember it was the end of the legislative session last year, and we came back in a special session, and the legislature, to their credit, we do this better than anywhere else in the country. They said, hey, we're going to be really careful. We're not going to spend money we don't have. We don't know what's going to happen over the next year. And so they looked for ways that we could peel back and save money. And for some reason, somebody got the idea that this would be a good idea to get rid of. And I told them at the time, I'm on record, I said, guys, this is a bad idea. In fact, it will end up costing the state money because while we'll save a little, you know, a nickel or a dime here, so many people will forget to renew their registrations that we'll see a major decline in people paying their, you know, paying their fair share of their renewals. Turns out that, David, you and I were right, and the legislature recognizes it too. To their credit, they fixed this in this legislative session. So very soon, as soon as the law goes into effect, we'll be ramping back up and getting those postcards back out to people to make sure that we're reminded. I need the reminder. I never look at that sticker on my license plate. I never remember until I get that card in the mail, and lots of people are like you and me. So the good news is that government made a mistake, but government is fixing it, and we should be back in business soon.
David, thank you so much for your call today. Let's go to our next texter, who Governor is wondering whether there are any plans to help seniors with a tax break on Social Security. They say many other states do, and with rising property taxes, they're worried it's going to push them out of their homes.
Yeah. So, speaking of great things that happened in this past legislative session, that was one. I mentioned earlier that because Utah tightened its belt, because we kept our economy open, we were able to invest in education and infrastructure, but also a $100 million tax cut. And a significant portion of that tax cut was directed at seniors and Social Security. We're just one of maybe nine states, somewhere in there, that still taxed the full Social Security, and so that is changing. Again, that law will go into effect in just a few weeks, and people will be able to, especially seniors who we are worried about, will be able to see that reduction in their tax bill to the state.
All right, let's go to our next caller. That is David in Highland. Good afternoon, David. What is your question for the governor?
Hi, Governor. The Utah Jazz is excluding white children from consideration for their scholarship program. Do you think this is racist? And what will you do to prevent the Utah Jazz from acting in this racist manner?
Well, I don't think it's racist. In fact, I think it's in response to, unfortunately, some very difficult and racist injustices that have happened in our community for a long time. And I'll tell you what I'm going to do for the Utah Jazz. Absolutely nothing. Because you know what? I believe in the Constitution, and I believe in the freedom of businesses to make decisions, and decisions that are right for them. Your kid or my kid, they have no right to the Utah Jazz's money, and the Utah Jazz and Ryan Smith can do the things that they want to do with their funds and their revenues. And look, it's an awesome program, and it's something that we should be celebrated. The cool thing is that the Utah Jazz have more wins than any team in the nation, which means that there are more scholarships available for kids in our state, and those kids, these are kids who are in at-risk communities. These are kids who have struggled. These are kids who have not had access to the same opportunities that my kids and your kids have had. We live in a nation that does have a very difficult history, and sometimes we try to ignore it. A history of racial injustice, a history where of course slavery being the most severe and awful example of that. But look, that stuff doesn't go away overnight. And kids, we're working very hard on equity, making sure that every kid in our state has the same opportunities as others. And so looking for ways to lift communities that have been historically and disproportionately impacted isn't racist at all. In fact, it's a great way to overcome racism. And I'm really proud of the Jazz and the great things that they're doing there.
Governor, our next texter is asking, they are concerned about all the traffic headed up the canyons, especially on the weekends with skiers. They're glad that skiers can enjoy the canyons, but they say that it makes it tough for non-skiers to enjoy the canyons, and they wonder if there's anything in the plans, in the works, in our canyons to help out with this traffic congestion.
Well, there are. In fact, there are things that we've been working on for a long, long time. Now, this is a difficult issue because, you know, anytime you're looking to fix traffic concerns in a canyon, and there are federal lands all around this, right? So there are lots of different partners. We've been going through a process. So Little Cottonwood Canyon is the big one that we talk about frequently. And we're working really hard on a solution there. We've gone through a process where where UDOT has evaluated lots of different options, and they will be putting out a preferred alternative. I think there are five or six different options. So, expanding the roadway there is an option. A gondola is an option. A train is an option they're looking at. Increased bus service up the canyon to get more cars off the road is an option. We're looking at all those options. Tolling the road is an option. Making it a toll road is one option. There are a whole bunch of different things on the table. So they will come out with a preferred alternative, a recommendation, and then the public has an opportunity to weigh in and give us their ideas, what they think should happen, which prefer alternative they would prefer, and then we as a state with the legislature will ultimately make a decision on what happens in that canyon, and see what we can do to increase access and make it so traffic isn't so backed up, especially during ski season. But I'm really excited at the opportunities and looking forward to see what shakes out and what the people of Utah would like to see happen there.
Governor Linda is next on the line from Cottonwood Heights. Good afternoon, Linda.
Good afternoon. I have a suggestion. I'm wondering about doing away with park strips. You know, on the news, they were talking about Las Vegas or the grasses or whatever. And I watch the water go down the gutter. And if we all, you know, if the state came up with a program to help each of the homes do away, and I don't want gravel because that just ends up in the street, but if there was some way to either, you know, make all the neighborhood the same, that if there was a program to help the families fix that, and I think that would save a lot of water with the drought that we're dealing with. We have a home or a street that has done all river rock, and it just really looks nice.
Thank you, Linda. I love the way you're thinking, and that's a really excellent idea. We do look. We're working to develop new water resources, but as we continue to grow, we are the fastest growing state in the nation over the past 10 years. Interesting, there was an article out this week that showed it's not just that a whole bunch of people are moving here; they are, but we're not even at least right now top 10 for in migration. But the interesting thing about Utah is nobody leaves. We were number one in the nation for people staying here. And so you don't get the turnover that you would normally get. And because of that, we're going to need more water resources over the next 30 years. And we're going to have to conserve water and be smarter with the way that we use it. And you've touched on one of those great, great opportunities for us to be more careful. Now, the park strip decision is a local decision, and so we would encourage you to reach out to your mayor, to your city councils, to help make that decision. There are local planning boards, zoning boards, and planning commissions that work on this. And so I think that's a great way. As you know, we have declared a drought emergency in mid-March because we know, well, we are in a drought right now, and if things continue, it's going to be a rough summer. And so we want people to start conserving right now. That's one way to do it. I also like the idea of incentivizing homes to have less grass, which does require a tremendous amount of water. There are great ways to do that. As you said, there are some just beautiful landscaping out there that happens without the same amount of water as we use for our lawns. And so I could see an opportunity for us to help families that want to do that, you know, not mandate it, but encourage families to do that, to save money and to save water. And so I like the way you're thinking, and we'll certainly talk to our mayors and commissioners about park strips and see if we can't do a better job there. Thank you, Linda.
And we are taking your calls and questions at 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. We'll be right back with our final segment on Let Me Speak to the Governor.
Get your questions answered by the governor. Call 801-575-8255 to join Let Me Speak to the governor on KSL News Radio.
Thank you for spending your noon hour with us, Maria Chalaos, along with Governor Spencer Cox. And we're going to squeeze in as many questions as we can in this last few minutes of the program. Governor, let's go to David in Salt Lake. And David, what is your question for the governor?
It's related to traffic as well. We talk a lot about making roads wider, alternates like trains and things, but are we doing anything in the future to make our roads smarter? Should some of those investment dollars be spent on better communications between our phones and the grid system, or other things that would make traffic a lot less in Salt Lake Valley and across the Wasatch Front?
Yeah, David, thank you. Great question. And the answer is yes. So of course we have the money that we have in the state from the gas tax, as well as the general fund. About $600 million from the general fund, goes to roads. And, Utah is actually, known nationally and internationally, for innovation. And UDOT has been very engaged in trying to make our roads smarter, to improve the grid. We have the center, the UDOT center down here where all of the technology comes together. We've been expanding our fiber optic network, connecting our street lights, as well as the cameras all across the state, to bring them into to one location, to use algorithms to try to time those lights in a way that make it better and easier for people to get where they're going more quickly. And looking at a whole host of new technologies that are out there, including, by the way, drones and the ability for automated vehicles, both above the ground and on the ground. So driverless vehicles. We're working closely with manufacturers and innovators in those spaces as well. And UDOT, they've done all of these things. In fact, they have a partnership with Panasonic that will allow them to accelerate development toward a statewide system for collecting, monitoring, and sharing connected and autonomous vehicle data. And so this is really exciting stuff that will be happening. It's a $50 million partnership, and that Panasonic's going to help UDOT install intelligent sensors along selected sections of Utah roadways. So we're on the cusp of some really big advances. We have not had advancements in transportation for a long, long time. And it's exciting to see where the future is coming, and that Utah's at the forefront of some of those innovations.
Thank you for your call today. Governor, we don't often hear from 12th graders, so we have one that is texting us from the Utah Military Academy. And this person wants to know what you have to say about the medical studies done about the detriments to student health due to wearing masks. They say they had to be treated by EMTs for hypoxia because they weren't exchanging CO2. And so they're wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Well, I appreciate it. And Utah Military Academy is a great school. It's amazing. So there are some fake studies out there, some internet studies out there that have been done around this. Real studies have shown that there is very, very negligible impacts to mask on just about anybody. A few cases out there, again, very, very small cases, and the positives of wearing masks far, far, far outweigh. Again, as I said before on the vaccine issue, as human beings, we are really, really bad at assessing risk, and this is one of those cases where unfortunately people are getting their information off of Facebook and not from real doctors and not from from real medical studies that have been done, and so it's unfortunate. Now, if you're one of those people that has actually had an impact, obviously that's a really big deal, and certainly something that it needs to be treated, but we have not had any significant impacts from the studies that have been vetted through nationally, internationally, and so we're doing everything possible. Your risk of an adverse effect from the COVID reaction is magnitudes greater than from a mask wearing.
Let's take our next caller, and that is Pete in Ogden. Good afternoon, Pete.
Hey, Governor, what's up? Hey, my question is, when are they going to fix the roads to fix the potholes instead of fixing our cars? I'd like to buy a new car and having those California people move here. We made a mistake on that by building more homes.
Pete, thank you. I need your energy today. It's
Me
so
too.
Great to it's so great to have you out here. So Pete, I'm going to give you the good news first, okay? The good news is just this week there was a study done on the infrastructure, including roads, of every state in the nation. Here's the good news, and that is that Utah came out first amongst that. We have the best roads and the best infrastructure of any state in the nation, so we should be really excited about that. Now, Pete. here's the bad news. We got a C+, right? So if you're grading on a curve, we got the A. But unfortunately, we're not grading on a curve. It means we still have some work to do. Now, here's the thing. UDOT is always fixing the roads to ensure the maintenance of the roads and bridges. We know that good roads cost less, and so the cost to maintain a road is lower than the cost to replace a road if they fall into disrepair. UDOT does a really good job of that. We supplement our gas tax with about $600 million a year in general fund taxes, and that's great stuff. But however, local roads, and this is something where I pushed the legislature last year. We were able to get more funding. We suspect that that we'll get more infrastructure funding from the federal government. There's a deal I know that the administration is working on with Congress right now, which will help local governments because they have not gotten what they need. The gas tax has not kept up with the cost of roads. So we actually have a need and an opportunity to help local governments. It's something I push for in this legislative session. We were able to get some additional funding for local governments, but we need to get them even more so that they can keep up with the potholes in their areas. Now, as far as the Californians moving here, look, that's not how it works. You can't keep people from moving to a state. That's not how the United States worked, never has. We're building homes for our kids. While there are lots of Californians moving here, it's less than people think. Most of the houses are being taken up by our kids and grandkids. We have the youngest population in the nation. We have more kids per capita than anywhere else in the country. That means we need homes for our kids to live here. But that means, you know, this isn't North Korea. People get to move and live where they want to live. The fact that people want to live here means we're doing something right. My only ask for the people is, look, you want to come here for a reason. Don't try to turn us into the place that you left. Try to keep us. There's a reason you love Utah. It's because we have these awesome conservative values that have made Utah such a great place. There's a reason you're leaving California, so don't try to make us exactly like the place you left. That's my only ask.
Governor, we have so many people still on the line, so many questions still to be answered. Hopefully people will join us again next month for Let Me Speak to the Governor. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Maria.
And have a great afternoon. Boyd Matheson, Inside Sources, coming up next from 1 to 3 here on KSL News Radio.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.